Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Jessica.
And this is episode 101 of the Bumblebee Podcast. We just cracked each other up.
It's gonna be a silly night tonight. Yeah. Sorry.
We just cracked each other up.
We did.
And I wish I had that, but I don't.
Okay, so what's up?
We have a lot to talk about.
Yes, all right.
Okay, so I had last time we recorded, I talked about the knit-along pole.
Mm-hmm.
There are two that are neck and neck. One is stash decluttering, and the other is out with the old, in with the new, and they're like two votes off, so I can't even say by the time this
go
airs, like... You know,
I'm for whichever one doesn't involve people giving me a hard time about my old projects. I'm sick of it, people.
So
get out the vote.
Yeah, so I'm going to lock that tomorrow. I think tomorrow's the last day to vote, so I'll lock it tomorrow night. So by the time you hear this, it's too late to vote if you didn't.
Oh,
sorry.
Whoop.
I know. And then I wanted to thank Sarah Monty, who gifted me a pattern. She gifted you a hat pattern, too, didn't she?
I didn't make a note of it. I'm sorry. I got a couple of things around the holidays from people, which was really, really nice. And then I also got a couple of things from people around layoff time as well, which was really, really nice. And I didn't make a note of it, but I did thank everybody individually.
I gave you one of the around layoff
time
ones.
Yes, I did get one.
I was like, oh, this doesn't substitute for having a job.
Yeah, I have a friend who, anyway. Yes.
Oh, and I was going to talk about the favorite moments thing, which was pretty funny. A lot of people like the penicillin for your soul from the last episode, yeah.
Yes.
When we crack each other up, that happens a lot.
Yes.
Someone said, which was very nice, Paula Kay said, any Audrey episode.
Yeah.
Well, they don't happen anymore because you're in bed when we record.
That's right.
It's so nice.
No, we just get the cat. But someone else said the cat, so.
Yeah, the cat. Who has only one volume?
Yes.
Cranky and frugal equals krugal. We are funny.
We are. Well, yeah, someone also commented on the when I crack myself up. Which I always say, say to Wes, like, I crack me up. And he says, yes, you do, honey, so.
Enable people to new movies and shows.
Yes.
Dutch Girl 63. And that you're a yarn savant. And giving him all the colors of Cascade.
I am. Although, you know, after time away from the yarn shop, that's going to... My powers, I feel them weakening.
To like bring in swatches with things so that you can like
just
hone your skills.
Color cards to pour over just to refresh.
Just light out the name. Type the number.
Test. Flash cards. Just everyone come to knitting. What's this? What's this?
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
So that was fun.
Yes.
And I want to talk about events, because you're going to Madrona in February.
I am going to Madrona in February.
And I will be there one of the days, probably Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon was talking about going down there, and so it was Karen. So I'll probably tag along with those guys, whatever day that is.
Erin, Sharon, and Karen all in a car together to Madrona.
That's amazing!
Like, that wasn't a plan.
We should get Kara, too.
Oh.
Kara, Karen, Sharon, Erin.
You know, someone named like Julie's gonna be like, can I come with you? And you're like, no, the name doesn't work.
You have to
change
your name.
It's
like Heather's.
Yeah, exactly. Heather one, two.
I have to choose my color. I choose blue.
All right. Let's speed this up. We're just gonna, like, we're never gonna get through this.
Oh my gosh.
We'll be at Madrona. Yes.
And then our knitting retreat is in April.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also going to the Northern California knitting retreat. That's the week after our knitting retreat. And that is put on by a bunch of people, but the Yarniacs are part of that group,
mm-hmm.
and the Two Knitlet Chicks, and then some other people I've met at Stitches. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
The cat is not very excited.
Oh, dear.
Because I'm not going to Stitches this year.
Right.
I decided to do this other retreat and then maybe do Black Sheet or Organ Block and Fiber this
mm-hmm.
year, because I've never been to either of those. Yeah, closer to me than Stitches.
Yes.
So, those are the events. And let's get on to knitting.
Okay.
What are you working on?
Well, let's see. So for finished objects, I finished the custom fit, the coat, that I was very, very close to finishing the last time. I sewed on all 9 buttons and 2 snaps, and it came out really cool. It's a little, I think I talked about it already, it came out a little smaller than I had planned for. I'd planned for a more relaxed fit, but I think just the fact that it's hand spun,
Yeah. It
wasn't as reliable in the swatch, even though I did a decent sized swatch. So it fits really well, but I was aiming for something a little looser, but that's okay. And then for the collar, I knit 12 inches of garter stitch, and every 4 inches I changed to a bigger needle size. And then I stood in front of a mirror and just kind of folded it up and then pinned it in place and then put snaps where I wanted them. So it's kind of a scrumbly.
Like a big fold over collar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or scrumbly.
Scrumbly. As I say. Yes. Scrumply's the new Krugel. And then I also finally got fired up on finishing my Song of the Sea, which I started like a bajillion years ago.
Yeah.
Knit like 4 rounds on and then just let sit. That's really the danger zone for me. Like, if I start a project and I do like just a teeny little bit of it and I put it down.
I just thought of Archer.
Of what?
The danger zone.
Oh, the danger zone. Yes.
Sorry. This is going to be an episode
It's
like
just going to be like yeah. this tonight. Sorry. So I've just been sitting there, but it's the easiest pattern. My kit was, so the yarn I had was supposed to be this gradient kit that I bought at Samplet at TNNA several years ago, in Packapeds from the Alpaca Yarn Company. And it is like so not a gradient, like not even remotely gradient. There's like 3 skeins that are all 1 color and 2 skeins that are 1 color. So where they met, I did a few rows of stripes to just make it a little less harsh, but it's just goofy. But it's such a pretty simple pattern. Everybody really likes it.
It's a really pretty pattern.
Because the pattern's so beautiful. And that, again, is a Louise Zaz Bangham pattern, Song of the Sea. It's a cowl, and there's a couple of lengths on it, done in some fingering white yarn. And then I picked up my Larimer scarf again, which I've been working on and off, which is the hand-spun alpaca scarf that I was doing, sort of like somewhere between a scarf and a stole that I was doing, where the first night I did it at knitting, I like completely botched it, where I was like, this part isn't in garter. It's in Interweave Knits, and I don't remember off the top of my head which one it is, but I think it was just this past fall issue of Interweave Knits, mm-hmm. but I could be making that up. And so I finally got into a rhythm with it, and then at knitting, not yesterday, but the week before, I like laid it out to look at it at the end of the evening and went, crap. Like, I'd done it again, where there's just little sections of 3 stitches of garter in it. Mm-hmm. And I spaced out on my way back, and so I end up with little blips of stockinette. So when I got home from knitting last Monday night, I had to tear down and re-knit those sections. And I was just saying to Ariel last night, though, that tearing down and re-knitting 3 stitches in garter is actually less of a pain in the butt than tearing down and re-knitting a single stitch in garter.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're doing a single stitch in garter, you gotta, like, hook it up this way and then hook it up the other way and hook it up. But with 3 stitches, you just take the loose thread and you knit 3, then purl 3, then knit 3, and then purl 3. And somehow that's less annoying than, like, 1 stitch this way, 1 stitch that way, 1 stitch this way. I'm sure it's all in my head.
Also, like, I feel like when you do 1 stitch, like, the stitch on either side looks funky. So
yeah.
If it's, like, a set of 3, then they all kind of...
They all look equally funky.
Yeah. But it's not as noticeable
yeah.
or something.
It's blended back in. And then I came up with the solution to the problem, which is to put an extra stitch marker in. Like, I had placed the stitch markers based on the pattern row.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a marker to remind me, like, this is garter stitch here. But I didn't put a stitch marker after the 3 stitches of garter, so that when I was purling back, I didn't have anything to remind me that this here is garter stitch. Which, such a simple fix, but it's made a big difference. So now that's a good couple feet long. I don't know how big it'll actually end up, because it's hand-spun yarn, and I'm sure mine's going to end up much shorter than what was intended to be, so it might be more of a wrap, but it's quite wide and it's really warm when it's laying in my lap. It's like, oh, it just sort of radiates heat because it's 100% alpaca. And then, speaking of that sort of danger zone kind of projects, I was gifted the metalwork collection by Elizabeth Doherty.
Me too.
And
so
I started the copper line mitts,
I love those.
Like right away, and I knit the band. So it's you knit a cabled or a sort of like, I guess it's a twisted stitch. It's a coin cable band, like a little strip that you then will join and then pick up stitches. So I've knit that band, and now I'm like, now I have to pick up stitches. I just haven't done it. And then I just, and then I also got a Quicksilver by, oh God, what's her name? Marilyn Berg, which is one of the many, many kind of stripey garter shawls that's out there, but it's done with three colors.
Is it Melanie or Marilyn?
Melanie, yes.
Melanie Berg.
Sorry, it's her patterns are like Marilyn.
Okay.
Is what she publishes under, but yes, Melanie Berg. Thank you.
She has a lot of stripey, multicolored.
Yeah. Colors. And so I pulled out a bunch of stash stuff, and I posted some pictures, and I picked out three colors, and I think I have literally knit like the first four rows of the pattern, which means I've knit about 20 stitches, and then it's just sat there for a while. But then I also, I don't know what prompted me to do this, but I've just had got startitis. I had this skein of Imperial Stock Tracy 2 from the retreat back in October, and I suddenly had this weird sense of urgency, like, I need to knit something with this right now. So I went into my library to see what I already had, and I had the Green Willow Cowl, also by Elizabeth Doherty, which involves starting with provisionally casting on 277 stitches. So that took like 2 days. I was like, I do like 10 stitches. I'd put it down and come back and do another 10. And
it's
so
really pretty,
I'm still just working on the edging on that. So I've done a few rounds on that. I mean, maybe the first 8 rounds of it or something. And then I put it down because Isolde's got a new mystery shawl knit along.
Right.
Follow Your Arrow 2. And
so you were talking to Sonia about that.
Yeah, so Sonia Reutz was saying that she was going to do it, and I'm like, I'm going to do it too. Yeah.
You did it last year, didn't you?
I did. And I don't do mysteries. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I don't really do mysteries much, but I like Isolde, and I kind of know generally that I pretty much like everything she does. And the one last year was a little funky, because like I did that one of the asymmetrical options, so it's a little weird. But I did it all in one color, so it's not too crazy, and it came out really pretty.
So
and
is this new one, is that one color or two?
I'm doing one color, so I've got it right here in front of me. I'm using the Alpha B.
Oh yeah.
So I wanted to use stash, which meant I needed to, if I wanted it to be one color, I only had 2 yarns in my stash to choose from. Without breaking up sweater quantities.
Okay.
So this is Alpha B yarn that I got at the second Sock Summit.
Is that the brown?
It's the brown one.
Yeah.
In the
I have that one too.
Kuma,
yes.
Which is bear in Japanese. So it's just a nice brown.
It's really pretty.
And I just, so the first clue came yesterday, and it's another one where you start where you knit like a little edging, and then you pick up 118 stitches. So I was like, oh God. So I had to kind of make myself a mug of tea and put on my reading glasses and force myself to pick up the stitches today. So I'm plugging away on clue 1.
It's really pretty though.
But yeah, last year I think I made my life simple and I pretty much just went section. So for each clue, there's 5 clues and each one there's an option A or B. And then there's also multicolor options. So last year, I think I pretty much just went A, except for maybe the edging. And I can't remember why. But so this year it was like, I was looking at it. I'm like, oh, there's a chart for B. I'm just going to do A. I'm craving
simple
simplicity.
Yeah.
So, but now I have all these projects that I've like only just barely started. And I know that that's a really bad thing for me where they'll just sit there forever. And it's going to take me a while to kind of pull myself together and get going on those.
Get it together, Jessica.
Get it together, gosh. Anyway, so that is where I am in my knitting life.
Cool.
What are you up to?
Well, I'm currently knitting on just like a plain sock. So I'm kind of in this like simple thing too.
Sounds like this is going around.
I know. It always feels like the beginning of the year and getting back from the holiday after Audrey's been out of school and stuff is just crazy. Mm-hmm. Even though we're like 3 weeks in now. So I had purchased this yarn a long time ago, like 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's Lorna's Laces Shepherd Sock. And the Devon color, and the brown, the chocolate.
It's Devon. It's a neighborhood in Chicago. That's cute.
So I bought one skein of each, and they're the smaller balls, 2-something. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to do the cuff, the heel, and the toe in brown, and then the rest in the blue. So cool. It's just going to be a plain stockinette sock. And I did a fairly deep 3x3 ribbing, maybe cute. 1.5 inches. So it's just easy for when I'm
brain dead.
Yes, which is a lot now.
Yeah.
What else am I working on? So my bus knitting, because I usually have just a plain project in my bag for commuting to and from work, is Paradise by Tanya Berry. And I got that as a kit. I won it as a kit at the first Knit Fit. So it's 2013, I want to say.
Okay.
Maybe 2012. Anyway. I don't know. I was trying to do math in my head. That's not working.
Don't worry about it.
But it was a kit with the Paradise Cowl pattern, which is a Classic Elite pattern. And then 2 skeins of Classic Elite Pirouette, which is the mohair with the bamboo core. Right. And so it's a cowl. And you cast on some stitches. And then you do wide stripes. They're 3-ish inches wide, and you do like 4 sets of those, and then you pick up along one long side, and you do, I think, 2 sets of the stripes, mm-hmm. and then there's some seaming, so you sew the long edges together, and then you sew the tube together, and then it has like stripes going 2 different ways.
Fun.
When I pulled out my stash, I do it every year on New Year's Day. I found it. And I was like, oh, this is good bus knitting. Yeah. And it will get this kit out of my stash. Yes. So I'm working on that. This morning I just picked up stitches along the long edge. And they don't have you slip the first stitch. Mm-hmm. But I just decided to make it easier to pick up in that mohair yarn that I was going to slip the first stitch. And, you know, that was pretty easy. So now I just have, like, long stretches of stripes to do.
Perfect for the bus.
Yes, perfect for the bus. I'm also knitting the Karen Double Layered Mittens by Heidi Hennessy. Noah bought me a kit for Christmas from Pepperberry Knits.
Oh, I saw which those is, on your Instagram.
Yeah. So, I didn't get them.
100% cashmere. Yeah. Woot woot.
I know, it's really nice. it's 4-weight cashmere, and I sent him a bunch of links for things and a list of things. I was like, any of this stuff. So he chose this mitten kit, and it comes with the pattern. Well, it comes with like a PDF of the pattern. Mm-hmm. And it's 2 skeins of sport weight cashmere. And he chose the Secret in Spring one, which is like a kind of a dark purple and a bright yellowy green. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll look really good with my Happy Street because it's same kind of purple and like lichen-y, yellowy mm-hmm. color. So I have the Grello. Lining. Grello. Yeah. I have the first liner done because you start with the Judy's Magic cast on for the top of the finger, and then you work down and you cast on provisional stitches for the thumb and go down to the wrist.
Okay.
And then you go back and knit the thumb, and then you weave in all the ends for the liner. And then you go back to the live stitches you've left for the wrist. And you knit the
whole thing over again.
The outside of the mitt going up from the bottom wrist up to the fingers. but the outside has a yarn over a lace pattern. So the color comes through.
Cute.
So And it's all the way around on the cuff and then just on the back of the hand on the mitten. So that's kind of what I work on the weekends when I can actually, like, look at the pattern because right. it's on my iPad. Takes more thought.
Yes.
But I have one liner done, so I'm ready to add the purple and knit up. And it's been coldish. I'm not going to say really cold.
No.
In Seattle, but I want to get them done so I can wear them this winter because...
Because right. it's supposed to be 60 by the end of the week.
God. Okay, so they're for next winter. but because I walked to the bus at, like, my bus comes at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's pretty...
It's good. It's
yeah.
as cold as it will be.
Yeah, and when it's clear and cold at 5:30 in the morning, it's like my face hurts and all yeah. that good stuff. What else? And I am still working on Midgie by Amba, which is my Black Trillium gradient. I just did a wash with my yes. gradient set. I'm done with knitting the center part, and I just had to pick up the 1,000 stitches there on the border.
Isn't it really yeah. easy to stall when it comes to having to pick up stitches? Yeah. It's really easy to stall.
It is really easy to stall. But I also wanted to get, I don't know if I had a 60-inch cable for my interchangeables. Mm. So I picked one up last weekend. So that was kind of a stumbling block for yeah. that. So now I have to sit down, have enough time to sit down and pick all the stitches up at once.
Yeah.
Because I don't like picking up stitches in stages. Because, like, you got kind of get into a rhythm.
Yeah.
I'm also trying to decide if I want to block it before I pick up the stitches.
That might be helpful.
Yeah, because it's a garter stitch.
Oh, that was the other... Oh, I totally left something off my list. I just reminded myself. Because I was going to say that was one of the other things that slowed me down with copper line. Is once you knit the cuff, you need to block it before you pick up okay. the stitches. So that kind of left... So I blocked it. But I also, I'm sorry, I'll that's come okay. back.
That's on my whips, though.
So. Oh, because I forgot, I also knit the Cambrian cowl from
Coastal
Knits.
Pretty soft.
And it was another one of those things where I'm like, I'm going to do this really quick project. I had a gift certificate that I won at the Knitters Guild holiday party for Tea Cozy Shop, and I just happened to be right by there and remembered.
That's the one that's like 10 blocks from my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I ran in and got 2 skeins of Plymouth Baby Alpaca Grande to do this cowl. And then I thought, this is going to be a really fast, quick cowl. And you knit this little rectangle. And then you pick up stitches and knit the rest of it in the other direction. And I was like, yay, this will be so fast. But you knit the rectangle and then she suggests that you block it. And you really should block it. You know, bulky alpaca, like, took a couple days to dry.
Yeah.
So I was, like, all ready for this, like, done in an evening project. And then I had to stand there for 2 days, like, poking at it. Like, are you dry yet? Are you dry? And so then I had that sitting there drying. And then I had the copper line cuff sitting there drying. And I'm like, you're supposed to be my quick projects. But I finished the Cambrian cowl. And it's really cute. It's really warm. Yeah.
And the buttons were cute.
Yeah. And if you could knit it without blocking it, it would be done in an evening, but you should really block it.
Yeah. So
sorry, I jumped in on you.
Yeah, that's okay. Did you finish stuff or was that?
I finished my custom fit song of the feet and the Cambrian. Sorry. I do mine all at once. You break yours up. Yeah. We got different styles.
So last time we talked about my cozy cardigan, I was knitting out of Eco Plus and I finished it. I just have to sew buttons on.
Oh, cool.
So, and actually wore it all weekend because I don't really need cozy. Buttons. Yeah. Just around the house. It is cozy. That nice big shawl collar. Mm-hmm. I like it. It was easy. And I had to break into the third ball for the second sleeve and the seaming.
Oh, so now you've got like 440 yards left of the second, so that last one.
Yeah.
Darn you, ecological wall.
So good and so bad at the same time.
Yeah.
I also finished the 1,000 Kisses socks. Those are the socks I was making for Audrey, and they're too big. I ripped out the first one and until the color work band, and then did the smaller needle size, uh-huh. but I steamed them to steam out to block out like the color work band. They're just too big. I came home and they were just like on the floor because I think she wanted to wear them and then like got frustrated. They were too big. Aww. So I'm going to knit her another pair of socks that are,
but they'll fit her soon. So yeah.
Yeah. I'll knit her another pair of socks in like pink or whatever that actually fit. and don't have color work, just like plain pajama socks. She'll be happy. And I've been knitting a bunch of scrap hats. So one of my things is I want to use up my partial balls of yarn and scrap yarns.
Blanket!
I don't do that.
I know.
That's you.
That's my mental illness, not yours.
True. So Stash and Burn is having this 15 hats in 2015 yes. knit along. And this month they're featuring woolly wormhead patterns. And I have two of her ebooks. I have Bambinis and I have Twisted Woolly Toppers. Maybe that's it. I've knit a couple of them. And actually, I knit a Quinn hat some time ago and forgot that I had knit it. So I went to start the project and it popped up.
I guess I did that.
Here's the second one. So I knit Quinn. And I knit that out of Simply Worsted Marl, which is a Scacelle yarn. Mm-hmm. And I have none of that yarn left. I have, like, maybe 2 feet left after knitting that. And I knit, I think there are 4 sizes, and I knit, like, the second or third one.
Very cool.
So, and I didn't really weigh my yarn. So I was just like, it'll be fine.
And it was.
And it was. And I knit Rocketeer. Which, I was going to bring it last night, but I wasn't feeling well. Oh. So, this is Rocketeer. So, I used Noro Teo, which is an air and weight, kind of chunky, left over from Audrey's blanket. And it's side to side. And it's got
kind short of row wedges?
Short rows. Yeah. Kind of wedges. Yeah. So, you do a provisional cast on, knit it side to side, and it calls from some other Noro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Noro yarn. No, it's a garter Kitchener, which I have not done before, which is pretty easy. Yeah. It's just kind of pointy at the top. It looks really narrow, but it stretches because it's garter.
Yeah.
And it's pretty soft.
Cute.
It's cute. It actually colorful. Fits. Yeah, it fits Audrey, but she doesn't want it, so it's going to go in the charity bin.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the other thing, all the hats I knit, because she says she wants hats and then never wears them.
Yeah.
So they're going to charity. I'm gonna do the warm for winter and keep a bin of them and take them all in November, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other one I knit was Trullo, and these are all from Bambinis, which is a DK weight hat, and it's stripes. And I think the pattern actually calls for 4 different colors, but I use 3, and you do the color changes on the outside.
Okay.
You purl it.
Yeah, you do that garter ridge there for the color. Yes.
Yeah, and then it has like a little I-cord loop at the top where you like do I-cord and then you sew it down. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little pull tab at the top.
But perfect stash buster.
Yes. And we'll get back to that. We're going to talk about choosing yarn for scrap projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last hat I knit was, I also did not weigh the yarn. Weigh the yarn for those. I don't have those on there.
Oh, no.
This.
I saw this on Instagram too.
Yeah. I called it Catch as Catch Can because I did not weigh the yarn at all. I didn't know if I was going to have enough, but I had no yarn left. It's just like an average adult size hat. It's Cascade 220 in a dark heather green.
Mm-hmm.
And classically Portland tweed in gray. And I just picked out a colorwork motif out of my 1,000 colorwork motifs book.
Uh-huh.
And I had no yarn left. I had like the longest end was like 8 inches.
Yay!
It's a little scary at the end, yarn chicken. But I like it a lot.
Well, that's the thing I find with hats though, is like if I feel like I'm worried I'm going to run out, I just start skipping the plain row, and I just start decreasing every row. And some hats, too, it just depends how many wedges I make. Since a lot, usually when I do hats, I'm just making it up. And so I don't really pre-plan how many decreases I'm doing in the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And on some of them, if you're doing fewer decreases, the crown can go on maybe a little bit longer than you want it to and can get a little pointier. So, and those I tend to decrease more frequently anyway.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking at my yarn and I think, maybe I'm going to run out, I just start decreasing, start leaving out that row.
Yeah, so I just, I think I used a 7 because of the color work part and cast on 80 and did some 2x2 ribbing and then did the color work part, and then knit a few rows, and then I did decreases every, I think, you know, every 10th, knit 8, knit 2 together around. Mm-hmm. I also thought about doing, like, the 4.
Yeah.
That, like, the turn a square hat, if you've knit that, where you do, like, 2 decreases at 4 points. Mm-hmm. So you're decreasing 8 rows.
8 stitches.
8 stitches every round. To make it, like, a square on the top. Right. But, it turned out really nice.
Yes.
I blocked it and everything.
It's lovely.
I forgot about these. These are actually for Abra. So for our friend Monica, for her birthday, I made up these color work mitts, because she loves Eddie Izzard,
uh-huh.
that say cake on one and death on the other. And then Abra saw them, and she said, what do I have to get those? And Monica brokered a deal in which Abra had to bake me 14 cakes or something, which is ridiculous.
Is this like the sandwich lady who had to, you know, to get her wedding proposal?
So... she made me a bunch of cake, and I don't actually need that much cake. But I made them, and she asked her what color she wanted, green and gray, and this is what I had, which is not super strong. They're pretty subtle.
Oh, yeah.
But
Cake, that's cute.
So those are for her, and they're in Cascade 220 Sport. They're pretty cute.
Did you base your stitch counts off of an existing pattern, or
nope.
did you just figure it out?
I made it up. Monica's cute. Are black and, like, a bright, bright blue.
Cute. I feel like I don't do enough color work to have a good sense of what my gauge is to just jump in and do color work.
I'm awesome like that.
Well, you do a lot more color work.
No,
than
I do a lot of color work, so I always know, like, I use Cascade 220 Sport, and I use, I think, a size 4 and a size 5 needle. So, like, normally with Cascade 220, I probably would have used a 6 mm-hmm. if I was just doing a hat, because I know I got 5 stitches to the inch with that yarn on a 6. And it makes a nice fabric, but because of the color work, I didn't want to be too tight around right. someone's head. So I went up to a 7 and just did the whole thing on a 7. But yeah, I do a lot of color work. I do it pretty often too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun.
Yes.
They're fun.
Very cute.
And then I just chose another, like, simple kind of wonky herringbone type motif from my, 1000 color work motifs book. It's that little spiral bound one right there.
Oh, this
next
one.
To my complete Bronte
Sisters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, it's super good.
Oldie. Yeah, because that one's got, like, Stranded and Intarsia and, like, all sorts of
Yeah, it has
motifs.
Like, modern pictorial motifs, and it has the one I use for this hat is a Lapland one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Fair Isle and, like, it's different like, ethnic knitting regions, and then some funky stuff in the back.
Cool.
Just, like, a little watch, like, if you wanted to knit a colorwork watch into the bottom of a kid's sweater, like, on the sleeve. Like, you could do that. It's funny. Anyway, it's all that stuff.
Ooh. All right.
So, choosing yarn. So, Selby I.N., she's in Indiana. That's the I.N. Suzanne asked me how we choose yarn for scrappy projects. So what is your approach? Besides blanket.
Well, yeah. So it's kind of funny. Usually, like, when I'm knitting a project, a non-scrappy project, I know what I want to make, and then I find the yarn to go with the project.
Mm-hmm.
With scrap yarn, though, you've got to think about it the other way. Like, okay, well, I've got... So I usually start with... I think we've talked about this a little bit. I will, I'll weigh the yarn, figure out how much of it I have. So if I find I have 75 yards of this worsted weight yarn, then I'll go to Ravelry and I'll do an advanced pattern search for, you know, 50 to 85 yards of worsted weight yarn. And I usually check first in my library and in my favorites to narrow things down. And if I can't find anything there, then I might look at free patterns, because if it's the middle of the night, I just want to knit it, like, now. And I'll usually pick something based on that. But if you listen to the podcast for any length of time, you know I do tons of hats. And, you know, if you've got about 100 yards of a worsted weight yarn, like, that's a hat. And if you don't have quite enough, then you can throw in just a stripe of another scrap that you've got. So most of mine end up being, I mean, you know, scraps to me lend themselves to those little things, hats and mitts and things that don't take a lot of yarn. But I do also get that weird urge sometimes to like, what if I put them all together and make one giant thing like a blanket? I'm really trying to fight that urge because, you know, those are huge long-term projects and they just aren't, you know, there's that satisfaction of like, I'll make a hat out of this tiny little ball of yarn and like, boom, it's done. Or a little baby hat or a pair of mitts or something. So I usually, yeah, for those I usually will let the yarn dictate a bit.
So do you worry about combining like non-superwash and superwash yarns or not so much?
I try to keep things, yeah, I guess I generally try to keep things together. Like I did Northumberland from the Katja Frankel book that I've knit all those millions of hats out of. And it's just got a little band of color work. That's, so that
I head to toe kids knit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did, so I kept it all in like superwash merinos that had a similar twist and a similar look to them. I'm a little weird about that. Like I maybe it's just like a lack of vision. Like I generally like to keep yarns that are a similar characteristic together unless I'm going for like an effect. Like if you're knitting something and you want like one band to be really fuzzy for some reason.
Like I try, if you're knitting like a color work kids hat that had bunnies and you wanted like
the tails to be fluffy.
Yeah. Use like an Angora blend.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm even weird with like Cascade 220. I tend not to really like the way the heathers look when they're paired with the solids. Like, I just feel like the heathers are so complex, they make the solids look really boring and kind of thud. So I do try to generally keep things together unless I go total opposite end of the spectrum and do my Helix hats, which are a total blender, and I take everything and I don't... And I'm also... I do also play pretty fast and loose with gauge on and stuff like that, too, where it's like, you know, the difference between a light worsted and a heavy worsted or a DK, and I'm like, eh, whatever. It's all, you know, it all worked out here. So with Helix hats, I feel like, you know, the more the better, like the more I can bring to the party, because I think I had heard someone paraphrasing like an alleged Kay Fassett quote. I don't know if this is something that if your color scheme isn't working, you know, just keep adding more color, you know, or add 10 more colors, something like that. And that's sort of my philosophy when I'm doing something really scrappy is, you know, if five colors aren't quite looking right, then if you add another five, they all sort of start to work together. So that's the way I usually approach it. Basically, the way I approach it is not very scientific. I just kind of like pick something up and I knit it. When it comes to scraps, I'm not, you know, I'm not very methodical that way. What about you? Do you have a more...
Well, I spent... So, I'm knitting all these scrappy, this Purtle skein or whatever, hats and stuff. Because a couple weeks ago, I went through... I spent, like, pretty much most of the day Saturday detangling and sorting my scrap bags. I had two really huge bags that I was tired. They didn't really have a home. So I went through there and, like, really looked at it and, like, tossed some stuff that I knew I wasn't going to knit or didn't like knitting. And anything that was, like, way too tangled.
Oh, yeah.
I had a really big snarl in one of them.
Boo.
Yeah. And then I had, like, a fabric bin that are, like, inserts for closets or whatever. And most of the stuff went in there. And then I... sort separated my sock weight scraps by color and put them in jars up there.
Because
I cleared off that top shelf. Because when everything was jumbled together in a plastic bag, I couldn't really see what I had. And now I'm like, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
and I can see what I have.
And then you paw through it too, and then you just make it all snarly.
Yes.
I've
been working through my worsted weight scraps more, which is that big fabric bin.
Oh, yeah.
It's really big. it's like DK and up. So it's DK, worsted, Aran, and chunky. And I don't have a lot of chunky weight yarns. I don't knit with them very often. So it's a lot of worsted.
I rearranged my office yesterday.
I saw the pictures.
And I have a bin that I put all my bulky in it, and there's like nothing in it. It's like rattle, rattle, rattle. There's nothing. I'm sorry, my knitting is like super noisy tonight because I've got...
You have 10 million pins. Stitches.
Yeah, I've got a million stitch markers marking short rows. Yeah, so, but I think also what I call a scrap and what you call a scrap, like, our line is a little different. Like, for me, yes. Scraps are, like, mingy little tiny things. If I've got 3/4 of a skein of, you know, a Cascade 220, like, it goes back into the worsted bin.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's skein of yarn.
That's part of what I did. I think most of the stuff I have in there, except for, I think that Eco Plus that I just... knit my sweater out of, that is in the bottom of that, just because I didn't,
yeah.
couldn't jam it back into my cedar chest. But I did go through and pull, like, anything that's like a half skein or like more than half a skein is back in the cedar chest.
Oh, okay.
And
I pulled stuff too already and put aside to sell at my or give away at my retreat,
yeah.
in the fall. And then I got a clear container at the retreat, and I stuck all my little scraps. Actually, we must have had like a brainwave there. I stuck all my little scraps into it and set it on my desk as well, so
yeah,
that they would hopefully not get all jumbled through so much.
Yeah, I just went to Value Village and got little jars.
Yeah.
Two of them have lids and one did not have a lid.
That's all right.
So, but it's fine because yeah. I'm working through that anyway. But so this is what I look for when I choose yarns. What weight I want to knit with. Mm-hmm. I look at if it's super wash or not super wash. I also look at how much I have, and then I will also look at fiber content and, like, twist. So
yeah.
I don't normally like to mix textures of yarn. I know it can be really interesting, but I feel like if you're knitting a scrap thing that's obviously a scrap thing, you kind of want to keep it uniform. I mean, I want to keep it uniform. Because
yeah.
I prefer things that don't look super duper scrappy.
Yeah,
like,
too
kind of
cobbled
crazy.
Together.
Yeah. It just reminds me of Shabby Chic, which is, like, not my favorite
yeah.
thing. So that's what I do. And then I will, like, well, for kids' hats, it's super easy. And Woolly Worm Hat has a bunch of hat patterns for kids that are stripes or something else and take very minuscule amounts of yarn. So, and she'll say this takes, like, 25 grams of 4 colors, which Trulo was like that, but I still ended up with like half the tiny little ball left.
Oh.
So I can knit another one probably.
Yeah.
Maybe in a smaller size. I think I knit the largest size on that because it fits Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
having a good scale though is helpful. Like I had a scale for years that was the digital scale I used to use when I made soap.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty accurate scale, and it finally died, and I thought I was reordering essentially the same one. It's like an Ascoli scale that's like accurate to like plus or minus 1 gram, and it came from Amazon, and it's like this teeny little thing, but
it's
it works.
It's like a drug dealer
well,
scale.
Except it works really well. It weighs the same range as the bigger one,
mm-hmm.
but what it does instead, when you put something on it, though, you can't see the readout, so it beeps, and it's to say, like, I know what the weight is now. You can take me off now, and
no.
they can take it off and look at it, but when I've got, like, little tiny things, I'll have to, like, put them in a bowl and then put it in there or something. But having a scale is really helpful.
Yeah, I have a male scale, like not a fancy one, but I got it like Office Depot.
This was like $13 on Amazon, so it wasn't like way fancy or anything. But I was always amazed at the shop though. Customers would come in all the time saying like, I don't know how to figure out how much of this I have left.
Oh yeah.
And then you'd say, well, have you weighed it? And like you could actually like see a light bulb appear over their head, like, oh, like that hadn't
yeah.
occurred to them that would tell them because they were thinking they would have to like measure.
And if you know what the yarn is, if you can figure that out from like looking on your projects on Ravelry, you can also look at the yarn on yarn page on Ravelry and figure out like how many grams and how many yards if you've lost the label.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much it as far as choosing the yarn. If I'm using it in color work, I'll be a little more picky about the texture.
Yeah.
just because, like, I want 2-plies to be with 2-plies.
And, you know, can, obviously color selection, too.
And color selection, yeah. But texture for me is really important. And then, like, I have a bunch of small balls of Spud and Chloe Sweater, which is a wool cotton blend, and I don't mix that with other stuff because it's such a, like, particular
texture
feel, and it behaves differently than other,
yeah,
other like Aran and heavy worsted weight yarns that I have. So I think that's it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
All right.
I have a couple of books.
Go for it, because I do not.
So I talked a while, not the last episode, the one before, I talked about Hangzimmet by Shirley Jackson, mm-hmm. about this girl who has this traumatic event happen, and then she's going off to college. She's like this artistic, sensitive girl, precocious. It was good, but I had a really hard time following what was happening. And I think you're meant to feel that way because she's going crazy. Yeah. I was like, this person shows up. I'm like, who is this person? Never heard of this person. Is this person actually a person or is it a figment of her imagination? Right. What exactly is going on? So I like her, just I really enjoy Shirley Jackson, but I had a hard time with it, and I ended the book and I was like, huh, felt a little unsatisfied.
That's too bad.
But then I read a book by T.C. Boyle called San Miguel. Do you not like T.C. Boyle?
I like T.C. Boyle, but he's not someone you read when you want to feel good about anything.
No. And this is kind of true for this book, too. But it has sheep in it.
Ah, there you go.
So San Miguel is an island. It's part of the Channel Islands off the coast of California. And this book starts in the late 1860s, I believe. Yes, late 1860s. And it follows three different generations of women who live on this island. So the first woman has consumption and her second husband has taken the rest of her money left to her by her first husband, decide they're going to go to San Miguel as part of this sheep raising thing because no one lives out there. Uh-huh. And they're going to, you know, raise sheep out there. No one else lives on the island. She's basically cut off. She's really sick. She has this teenage daughter who also doesn't want to be there, who is an adopted daughter. And it's basically her being kind of miserable and figuring out how to do things in this island, dealing with this husband who loves being out there and she hates it. She's used to like kind of upper middle class society. She lived in San Francisco. She's well educated and she just can't get with
being a shepherdess.
Yes. She can't deal with it. And, you know, she's sick. The house was built by, like, the sheepmen who lived there before. And it's, like, really damp. And the whole reason the husband says that they're going out there is for her health.
Right.
And it's, like, damp and foggy and rainy and mildewy. It's just, like... And then the second part is her daughter. So they end up going back to the mainland because the wife of the first section, like, threatens, I can't remember what she threatens. She threatens all kinds of stuff and just puts her foot down. She's like, I'm not staying here. We're leaving on the next boat. So she goes, she sends the daughter off to school in San Francisco. And then the daughter gets a letter and her mom is in decline. Uh-huh. And she shows up. Her mom has passed away. And the dad is like, I'm keeping you here. We're going back to the island. And basically, and she's trying to, over and over and over again, get away because she doesn't want to go back out there. He drags her out there and basically throws her in the kitchen. And is like, you're the cook, you're the maid, you know. And she finally gets off the island and she goes on to become this, like, actress, famous actress. And then the third woman is, like, the woman that's the happiest there. And she shows up. It's during the Depression. And she is in her late 30s. She's just married for the first time. This handsome guy. And she goes out there and she's, like, loves the quiet. She grew up in Manhattan. She, you know, she's, like, all about this homesteading lifestyle, and he is suffering from, he has depression, but most of the time is fine, and they have two girls and all that stuff. It ends kind of badly. In true T.C. Boyle style.
It always does with T.C. Boyle. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's never a good time with T.C. Boyle.
But the writing is very good, and the story was very good, and there's talk about knitting and crocheting.
There you go.
And sheep shearers that come to the island. And just found it fascinating because it's, you know, well, it's raising sheep on this island, and it's California history. Oh, and now it's, yeah, and now it's a, it's a, like, I'm not sure if it's a, I think it's a national park. Like, you can go out there for day trips if you have a pass.
Oh, cool.
But, like, yeah, it was just really interesting. I enjoyed it a lot, even if it was somewhat of a downer. But the characters were interesting, and I really liked that it was three women's point of views of, in different kind of time periods, talking about living in the same place.
Yeah.
And I'm currently reading Bone Shaker by Cherie Priest, or Sherry Priest. She's a local author, and it's a steampunk thing. Nikki sent it to me for Christmas, and it's okay.
Graphic novel?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
Maybe she does graphic novels.
No, I thought Bone Shaker was. I just mixed up.
I think it's part of a trilogy. I don't know that I'll read the rest of them. Well, first of all, the print is in like, it's like a sepia thing. It's like a purple, and my eyes are not good these days. So I find it kind of hard to read.
Oh, that's okay.
Just physically difficult to read. But it's, takes place during the Civil War. Washington is not yet a state. During the Gold Rush, there was some contest about creating a machine that could dig through ice to get to gold in the Yukon. So this inventor in Seattle invented this drill that something happened. Called the Bone Shaker.
Ironic, a big drill in Seattle.
You know, right? Called this Dr. Something Something.
In case people don't know, we're in the middle of a civic crisis right now because they're attempting to dig a tunnel like by the waterfront downtown for traffic.
Her name's Bertha.
And but the giant drill that came to drill the tunnel, Bertha has been stuck in the tunnel for months now.
Yeah, we don't know when she's coming.
There's no sign of when Bertha's getting out of her hole. So
I don't know if this is inspired by Bertha. It could be.
It predates Bertha. But Bertha could use a little of its inspiration, I think, to get out of her hole.
So something happens, nobody knows what, but the drill escapes, goes on a joyride or whatever, underneath Seattle, and releases this toxic gas called blight, the blight gas, which turns people into zombies.
Right.
So in order for to contain the gas, they've walled off what is now like downtown Seattle. And the inventor dies, and his wife and their son are left, like, you know, live in shame. And the son decides he's going to go back into the city to get evidence that his dad and then the grandfather, too, I guess, were not bad people. That it wasn't their fault. And then the mom follows him in. And that's where I am.
Cool.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not super into steampunk.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a free book, so I'm like, sure, I'll read it. But, yeah, I probably won't read the rest of the series. I'm about a third of the way through. All
right.
Yeah.
I have not seen any movies in theaters since the last time we talked.
Me either.
I've watched all of Breaking Bad now up to the last episode, and I can't like seem to get Wes. Like Wes wants to watch it with me, and I can't seem to coordinate to like get in a room at the same time to watch it, because we've been watching a lot of other stuff too. Like I'm up to date on a lot of TV shows. And there are a couple of, like, special event TV shows that are on right now that we've been watching with our younger son for, like, family viewing time. And one is Marvel's Agent Carter, because my younger son really likes the TV show S.H.I.E.L.D., and we usually make that kind of family viewing. But the Agent Carter is the character of Peggy Carter, who's in the first Captain America. Actually, she's in both Captain America films. But so it's set just after the war, late 1940s, and she's working for sort of secret spy organization. But she's she's taken for granted as a woman. And she's also kind of working on a side secret mission. So it's a limited run show. It's really, really good. I mean, it's just fun. It's one of the things I don't like about the TV show S.H.I.E.L.D., although I watch it because my son really enjoys it, is that it's kind of serious as a heart attack. Like, it only rarely shows a little glimmer of humor, which is, like, so welcome when it finally does. This show is a little cheekier. It's really stylish. It's super stylized, this sort of ultra 40s version. Like, she's always got, like, a flaming red lip, and it's this very dreamy, stylized version of the 40s. Yeah, it's cool, and it's just cool to see it. You know, it's nice to have a show with a strong female lead that it's just kind of unapologetic about, which I really enjoy watching. And the other thing we're watching, which is another one of these limited run shows, is Gallivant, which is the musical. These are both on ABC. And it's sort of a little bit Princess Bride, a little bit Monty Python, a little bit, well, it's Alan Menken who did the music. So let's say it's a little bit Little Mermaid or something. And it's very silly. It's really light. It's not aiming very high. So it's just goofy fun. And it's about sort of a disgraced knight who is dragged out of a drunken stupor for a new quest. And it's sprinkled with all sorts of guest stars and just silly business. And it is quite fun, actually. It's very entertaining to watch. So I've been watching that. And then I finally started watching Peaky Blinders just the other night. So I'm only 2 episodes in.
I was just having Peaky Blinders' Cillian Murphy boy crush talk with my supervisor, who's a male and is married to a woman and also has a crush on Cillian Murphy.
Oh, it was funny. At knitting last night, I'm like, Andy was talking about Hannibal, the TV show, because she loves that TV show.
I said, which
I've never watched, but I'm like, I just heard some casting news that I knew would make people at Pearly Girls happy, and no one knew what I was talking about. I was like, so I had to finally look it up. Richard Armitage is joining the cast.
Yet another
Pearly Girl favorite. He's joining the cast for the next season as the Tooth Fairy.
I need my smelly salts.
Which is so funny. It's like, because I don't really know Richard Armitage because I haven't seen any of the stuff he's in, and I don't watch Hannibal, but I saw this and I was like, oh, I know people who care about this.
I care about that.
I did see North and South, but I think...
Yeah, he plays John.
I just can't.
He's the owner of the mill.
Okay,
interest.
I just feel like everybody knows him now as a dwarf.
Dwarf, yeah. Hobbit, not my favorite.
Anyway. Sorry. That's totally
so exciting.
Random tangents there, but yes. So what have you been watching?
I've been watching lots of really good stuff. So I watch Only Lovers Left Alive.
I haven't watched it yet.
God!
I'm dying to watch it.
It's
because
so
you gotta
good.
Get the disc, right?
Yes.
It's a new
Jim Jarmusch.
Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah. Movie with Tilda Swinton, who I love.
We love Tilda.
And it's kind of a vampire movie, so I was talking to Noah about it. It has fantastic music, by the way, which is Jim Jarmusch's band Squirrel, because it's got an umlaut over the U, S-Q-U-R-L. The first song is a Wanda Jackson cover, Funnel of Love, which is amazing. So there's lots of music stuff in it. They're both, like, really into music and books.
So it's the idea is it's this pair of
vampires
played by Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston.
Mm-hmm. Who are both, and Mia Wasikowska's in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
She's crazy. So it's mostly filmed in Detroit, and there's, I don't know if it was actually filmed in Tangiers, but that's where Tilda Swinton kind of lives in different parts of it. So they are longtime vampire lovers, but besides it being Jim Jarmusch, and I just love his stuff, what's really interesting is that most vampire movies, and I've seen a lot of them, they kind of parallel vampirism to sex somehow. Yeah. And this is much more like the blood drinking is a junky thing, like they are taking drugs.
Okay.
And that's kind of ongoing throughout the film. I mean, you'd have to see it to really...
Yeah.
Like, if you've known people who have been on drugs in your life, you'll, like, recognize it right away.
Yeah.
But I thought it was pretty refreshing for a vampire movie. And the whole movie's not them running around drinking blood. It's them talking about their relationship. And then Mia Wasikowska plays Tilda Swinton's younger sister, who's, like, this crazy party girl.
Uh-huh.
Who's, like, comes to crash with them from L.A. and really can't control herself at all. She, like, goes on a rager and, like, thrashes the apartment and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just really good.
Cool.
Excellent music, too.
I'm dying to see it. It's been on the top of my list since it came out, but I just haven't made time for it yet.
So I also watched Grand Budapest Hotel.
We watched it again on New Year's Eve. Really good. So good.
I really liked it. And Noah actually said that he thinks that Wes Anderson is finally learning how to make movies. movies that he likes.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Noah.
Movies that Noah likes. I think he kind of made a point, which is a lot of Wes Anderson movies, you feel like you're standing out, that he's standing outside any kind of emotion that's happening, and this is much more personal.
Yeah. Although, Moonrise Kingdom, at the same time, very exceptionally stylized.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, Moonrise Kingdom, I think, is, like, one of his, well, I don't know. I think there's always this underlying sentimentality with his films.
Yeah.
I mean, Rushmore or Bottle Rocket, where it's really stripped down. But,
yeah.
I watched it again. It's so great. I was glad that, I mean, not that these awards thing matter, but when I saw it, I thought, oh, Ralph Fiennes should get Best Actor for this performance, because it's the most insanely pitch-perfect comedic performance I've seen
in eons.
It's just incredible. It's an incredible performance. And so, but of course, Oscars don't give awards for people doing comedy, so he won the Golden Globe, though, because Golden Globe has a musical comedy category. You know, because Oscars are just about, you know, who can look the most miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, his performance in that, I'm in awe of it. He's so perfect in that. Love that.
It's very good.
Yes.
And I watched Jodorowsky's Dune, which is a documentary about the film Dune that never got made.
Yes. So,
and it is excellent. I enjoyed it very much. I watched it with Noah, and it's synthesizer music all the way through, so he was like, he was like, really enjoying the music. It's appropriate for the movie. So, I can't remember his first name, do you remember?
I don't, I didn't see it, I've only read about it.
I don't know, his friends call him Jodo, so I don't remember. He's the director who's going to make the movie Dune into a movie in the 70s. And then funding and support from a studio never came through. But he had this amazing lineup of people. He had H.R. Giger was going to do all the sets and costuming. Mm-hmm. And Marlon Brando was going to be the Duke, I think. David Carradine was going to be Duke Leto. It just was like this crazy lineup of people and artists. It was going to be so amazing, and it never happened. So it's just like this, he just talks about, you know, this, it was going to be his life's work, and it just never happened. Right. And so it's kind of sad. But
have you seen Lost in La Mancha?
Mm-mm.
It's Terry Gilliam. It's a documentary about his version of Don Quixote that never finished filming, including like all the stuff from the set. And it was going to have, I'm blanking out on the actor's name. A really famous French actor as Don Quixote, and then Johnny Depp as Sancho, Sancho Panza. Anyway, but I've heard them. I've seen that one, and it's great. And I've heard this one compared to that as well. Sort of this ode to a film that never happened.
It's just so good. And there's a lot of... They had this huge book that was... Basically, he hired a graph... this guy who did French comics and hired him to do this shot-by-shot book of the whole movie.
Oh, like so storyboard the whole thing?
Yes. And it's basically like a graphic novel of the movie. With costumes all fleshed out. And then... What was really interesting, because all these people that he had gathered together, Jodorowsky had gathered together to make this movie that never happened, started getting picked off by other things. Like, Geiger did all the Alien stuff.
Right.
I think it's Chris Voss. He's British. Who did the... he did, like, book covers. Mm-hmm. Sci-fi book covers. Who was designing, like, how the ships would look and stuff. They had this, like... crazy special effects guy who's like the best guy in the 70s. But they showed like movies that were made after the film stuff fell apart, and it was just good.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like sci-fi, like, and I don't think Jodorowsky's ever read Dune. He's never read it.
That's funny.
Or two or three other people have never read it. They just think of Dune as Jodorowsky's movie that never got made.
That's funny.
Yeah. And I watched Submarine, which you had watched.
Yeah, oh, I thought you had seen it.
It's really good.
Isn't that great?
I enjoyed it.
It's really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Coming of age, boy wants to have sex with this girl, and his parents' marriage is bad, and it's really funny, dry humor. It's in Wales.
Yeah. based on a novel, yeah, it's got a great cast, and yeah, it's just a really...
Yeah, no, I liked it too.
Sweet. It's very, yeah, just very... truthful, kind of sweet, sad coming of age drama. Love that one.
And I just started watching the Fall series too, because that's on Netflix now. The Gillian Anderson.
I don't think I ever even made it through the first episode of season one.
Really?
Well, you know what it was? I think it was like the 8 millionth serial killer series I was on. And it was just too, I think I talked about this when I tried to watch it, that you're following the serial killer planning this murder, and you're also following the woman who's going to be his victim. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I was just like, I just can't take... Like, when I'm sitting here going like, oh my God, please just kill her already. It's like, that is not a good sign. I just couldn't take... It was, like, stressing me out. I was just not... I think I'd watched it, like, right on the heels of Luther and Top of the Lake and, like, this whole series of, like... just bad stuff happening to women movies and TV series. And the whole trope of, like, we're going to get to know this victim before we kill her and, you know, creep around on her for a bit. I couldn't take it. It was stressing me out.
That doesn't continue, though.
It's I couldn't get through that first episode. Or, yeah, I think it was just the first episode. I couldn't even get through that.
Yeah, it's really good. I enjoy it. I really like Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. Scully. She's great, and she's, you know, she's really smart, and she's a super strong character, and she doesn't really take any crap from anybody, and I enjoy that.
Yes.
And I'm watching Bob's Burgers.
Woo-hoo! All right.
No, I hate it when I do that.
Oh. The kids hate it when I do it, but I love it. I love that show. So I love that show so much.
I was talking about it last week at knitting. And I was like, I love Louise. And April was like, that's because you are Louise.
And I love Linda because I am Linda. And this is so, when we were talking about it with the kids, and we were like, well, you're Jean and you're, and then Wes is like, does that make me Bob? And the kids and I both turned and we were like, oh, you are so Bob. Yes, you are. Because we're always getting all goofy laughing, and he's just standing there like, guys, wait, stop. Like, waiting for us to, like, come down from whatever ridiculousness we're up to. It's such a good show.
It is a great show.
It just reminds me of really early Simpsons, where it's really outlandish and maybe, like, a little off color, but at its heart, it's still just a really, like, sweet family.
I really love Tina. She's so awkward in such an awesome way.
She just totally embodies that, like, horrible awkwardness of female adolescence.
I just, I really enjoy her, like, daydreams and nightmares. Kind of. Yeah. And then her, she likes her horses. Her friend
fiction. And
her friend fiction.
Her zombie.
Zombie issues.
Her zombie.
Where nightmares and sex dreams collide. Yeah.
Oh, man. She, yeah, it's good stuff. It's really good stuff. I love it.
I did not really like the first episode. I thought it got better in episode two.
You know, I watched the first season or the first couple of episodes a long time before, then I jumped back in and watched the rest of it. So, yeah, I do. I kind of remember it that way, too, where it takes a little while to kind of get into it. Or it also takes a little while to, like, kind of understand, like, who Tina is.
Oh, yeah.
To appreciate her weirdness. You know, because when you first see it, you're just like, she's weird and kind of in a creepy way. And then you start to... Something was happening to me this weekend, and I was just like, I must not like this because I think I was getting ready to submit a job application. I started making that Tina kind of noise. But yeah, it's such a good show. And also, if you're a lover of puns, puns galore. There's always like the special burger of the day. And then the exterminator, this exterminator truck and the whatever business opens up next door to them. But oh my gosh. I do really enjoy that show. It is very funny. That's another one I'm totally up to date on, so I just have to, like, wait each week.
Yeah, they're only, like...
Give me a new episode!
Well, there are three seasons on Netflix, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not... I think I'm on the third season, but not all the way through.
Yeah.
So, it's a long episode.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyway, so next time I kind of want to talk about... I'm doing the wardrobe architect thing, where...
Yeah.
That I learned about from... Elena of Stitch Party.
Mm-hmm.
She had mentioned that on her podcast. And now I'm doing it. I'm actually working through the worksheets and all that stuff. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll start a thread in the thing about that. Even if you don't want to, like, sew your clothes. Because I've noticed a ton of talk about decluttering.
Yeah.
Like, all over the place.
Yes.
And usually it's just me, because I like to declutter basically, like...
True.
Every day of the year.
Yes. It's true. And, well... And since I'm still looking for work, a job I was up, I mean, I realized I didn't really have, I don't have any business clothes any longer because I've been wearing like jeans to work for the last 10 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of went on a quest to start finding clothes. And then one of the jobs I was up for had an all black dress code. So I started, and then our friend Rebecca had mentioned on her blog wanting to develop a capsule wardrobe.
Yeah.
So then I started kind of burrowing down on that, and I'm like on Pinterest and pinning things, and I kind of came up with a game plan for it.
Yeah. So what Wardrobe Architect will do, I think it's a 16-week thing, and it kind of takes you through the steps of like figuring out like what your style is and what silhouettes you like and, you know, hemlines and all this stuff, and then you can kind of bring it together. I'm using Pinterest a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Jessica before she came over, I was on Polyvore just trying to, like, look at silhouettes.
Uh-huh.
Because it's kind of hard to filter that out in, like, fashion spreads.
Yeah.
To look at silhouettes themselves, like, separated pieces of clothing and be like, yes, this and this and this, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
So I will start a thread on that if you just want to work through... you don't have to work through the whole thing, but maybe talk about capsule wardrobes, because that's basically what you're doing with the wardrobe architect thing.
Yeah.
And there's also some decluttering your closet in there, too. So if you're into that kind of thing.
Which you are.
I am totally all about it. I love organizing.
Yes.
I was born this way.
Yeah.
My mom used to laugh at me because I would, like, organize her sewing stuff.
I was going to say you were, like, decluttering your toy box as a toddler.
I was, actually. I used to wash my plastic plates in the real sink. So it's good kind of oldest to have, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. We'll talk to you in a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Humble me. imagine.